Hello everyone, I am Saloni Jain, a founder and managing partner at Sanaikan Ventures.
So, Saloni, you must be probably among the youngest VCs in India. Tell me how that happened. Tell me about the journey to becoming a venture capitalist.
So, the journey started, I think, when I started meeting a lot of startups and especially companies which were started by people of my age, right? If you go back in 2015, 2016, I mean, I was 25, 26 back then, and most of the startup founders were of the similar age bracket, right? During that period, I had moved to Delhi in Gurgaon because I was working with L&T Finance. And Gurgaon being the hub of startups, I happened to meet a lot of entrepreneurs. And one of the interesting stories is that Uber had launched something called as Uber Share. So I used to take Uber Share and go from Gurgaon to Connaught Place every single day. And out of five working days, three working days, I used to meet some co-founder or the other hustling and telling me his story for 1 hour. And I think that's where, you know, I started to know their problems. And I realized that finance and fundraising is a big piece of it. So when I decided to do something on my own and join my investment bank, which is my family business, I said I want to work with these young companies which we are not working with currently. And that's where we decided we'll start a small family office cum advisory service in late 2018. And the idea was to A, advise startups, and B, also invest our own capital and understand the whole journey, see how much it multiplies, what are the risk and returns we see in this asset class. Before, so that time, there was no thought of starting a fund. It was more like, you know, working with these companies. Also, we had a very interesting philosophy at that time that we had a lot of old economy connections, like manufacturing companies, large business houses, and they all lacked technology. They all lacked fresh thinking. And we thought in India as a country, only capital is not going to help these companies. They do need a lot of business connections to actually grow and be able to make it big. And that we feel even today, that's one of the value additions we give from our funds even today. So we started with that philosophy, and since our 2-3 years experience was phenomenal, we saw great traction within our portfolio companies, we built our internal thesis, that's how we decided to launch the fund last year.
All right. Okay. Amazing. So initial couple of years, it was like your family's wealth being invested.
It was family's wealth, Akshay, and we had a lot of HNIs in our network, right? So wherever we used to invest, so we invested anywhere between 25 lakhs to 1 crore. And wherever we invested and we decided we'll take active interest, we had a bunch of people who kind of followed us and supported us and these portfolio companies. And since they also had good experiences, they all are today our investors in the funds as well. So that's how the journey started.
All right. Amazing. Tell me about the family business, the investment bank, which your father runs. What does that
do?
So,
it's something which we started in 2005. It's called Sun Capital. It's an investment bank which does debt syndication. So we raise debt through banks, NBFCs, private lenders for larger companies. We also have a merchant banking arm. So we are SEBI registered merchant bankers. We do SME IPOs, main board IPOs, stuff like that. And that's about it.
So merchant banking is the business of listing companies.
Merchant banking is the business of listing company.
Okay.
And if you see our roots, Akshay, my dad started as a broker. So Network Broking was our entity, which he started in 1994, which we exited in 2005. When we started, we were the largest brokers. We had 200 branches. The first broking company ever in India to get listed on NSE, BSE. Now it's called Monarch Networth and it's doing phenomenally well. So our history has been into equity investing. We've grown up seeing that, right? It could be SMEs, it could be startups. Most of the SMEs now call themselves startups. So the genesis, the thesis remains the same.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Like you were running a or your father was running a publicly listed brokerage company. Why did he decide to exit? Was it acquired by a PE?
No, it was not acquired. It was a strategic acquisition. A company called Monarch acquired it in 2004. And I think he decided to exit for multiple reasons. One is he wanted to sit back, relax. He had worked hard for a good amount of years. And broking is hectic. You are having lunch at 3 o'clock. Plus, I think he also got bored of that life. He wanted to explore something new. He all wanted to explore how he can multiply the wealth, what he currently has, rather than, you know, handling the hustle of a retail broker or the MD of a retail broker. So I think it was a mix of lifestyle and his personal development interest to get out of that cocoon and do something different.
And what does Monarch do?
It's the same. It's a retail broking.
Okay. So now
it's called Monarch Networks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, understood. Interesting. The investment advisory business that you started, this was focused on what, like pre-seed and early stage startups? Or
so this was focused till pre-series A.
Okay.
Mostly we used to target companies till pre-series A. We did land up working with a couple of series A and series B companies as well. But I think we did one or two and we realized that we're enjoying the pre-series A and seed part more. So then we continue doing that.
And that would essentially be helping them in fundraise. Like that was the service.
It was helping them in fundraise. It was helping them with making their MISs, making their projections right. Sitting with them on how should they be thinking about unit economics, projection, connecting them with the right strategic people in the industry. Investing capital wherever required, helping them the balance between debt and equity. So we did help with debt also in a lot of cases where we felt that all the money is not need not be raised by equity. So a lot of we used the whole internal strength and kind of worked with these companies.
And you would charge them like a fixed fees or
so our model was that
funds raised.
So it depends on what services they would take. If it was a pure fundraising assignment, then it was a percentage of the fundraise. And if it was other services, then based on what we are doing. So we had a team which helped them with their finances also in terms of how to account and stuff like that. You know, if they just needed the projections and the financial model from us to help us, then that would be a more fee-based assignment. But honestly speaking, Akshay, 9 out of 10, it was combined with fundraise. So in those cases, it was success-based.
Right. Yeah. Because I guess the biggest need of an early stage startup is funds, right? I mean,
everything else
is good.
It starts from there. I mean, that's what they come to us for. But then we have to make them realize that to get there, you need to cover those baby steps correctly.
Hmm. So, what's your advice for somebody in terms of the steps that they need to do to become investable? I mean, you were essentially helping companies to become more investable in the eyes of an investor. So what are some of the things that you think founders should get right before they approach a VC?
So before they approach a VC, I think a little bit of vision on future should be clear in term, and it should be on paper. So we see a lot of companies, you know, having a 10-year plan. What is the larger picture? But as an investor, it is very important for me to know what the company is going to do in the next 1 or 2 years, how the company is going to do that, how much capital is going to be needed. So I need to get a sense of comfort, right? If he or she is going to hire, what kind of hirees, what would be the salary bracket, how much money will be used. So we realize that there are a lot of talks about the long-term future and the market size and the industry. VCs know if they're getting on a call with you, they know what is the market, they know what is the size. What they want to know is, can you do it? And that's where detailing comes into play. I'm not saying not to talk about the market. By all means, please go ahead. But your next 2 years plan should be on paper. Like, it should be concrete. It should not be something which you're still figuring out. Figure it out before you get on a call with a VC.
Mm. Okay.
Also, if you're a D2C company, you have to have your numbers. Like, you need to know what's your SKU-wise breakup. You need to know your SKU-wise unit economics, channel-wise. You can't fumble there. You know, you can't not have that data on an Excel sheet and talk to an investor and then not get back with that data for a month. You've lost your track completely then.
Hmm. So, which is why you were helping them in things like MIS, because for these conversations, you need to have quick answers to questions around unit economics.
See, now life is easy. People are seeing Shark Tank and they know all these questions are important. That was not the case back in 2017.
So, what about at a pre-product stage, like companies which are yet to begin a product? Like you spoke of D2C, and you know, so when you're already out in the market, you have sales data, so that becomes the base on which your conversations happen. But if you're pre-product, could be either like SaaS product, D2C product.
Yeah, see, if you're let's say a pre-product tech, a SaaS company or a tech solution. And if you're pre-product, what will really matter to the investor is your idea in that case, right? Whether you have full clarity on the sector. For example, if you're solving a need of an education company or a media company, how much depth you have on that sector and how are you going to sell your solution once it's made? So then the whole analysis from a VC point of view is I'm going to meet the tech team. I'm going to understand whether what they are talking, they are going to make is structured or not. Because you're going to say that you make an autonomous car, but what are the steps to reach to that? If that is vague, then I don't get the conviction that you're going to make an autonomous car. Then second is you have to have a clear policy as to who is going to be your customer to buy that. So if then the vision board and the industry knowledge becomes very clear, and hence documenting that is also equally important. You as a founder also you need to have your thesis in place before you reach out for a pre-seed kind of a round. And then little bit background, and depending on what you want to start, the background of the investor and all plays a major role as well.
Like the investor should be interested in that space.
That's okay. But even if I'm interested and if you have a background in that space, then that also makes more conviction, right? That is why you say founder market fit kind of. But even if you're a founder market fit, the clarity is what is lacking amongst the entrepreneurs, and that is what is the gap in the whole industry today, that at least 1 or 2 years clarity needs to be there.
Okay. So you're saying at a pre-seed level, you typically find the biggest gap is in terms of how clear they are about how they will build, how they will monetize, whom they will sell to, what will be the go-to market. So all of that needs to be very well thought out and documented.
Yeah, see, I'm not saying it will go that way. But at least have some plan, right? Talk to people. A lot of founders in India are very hesitant from talking and discussing. Like we as Indians, I have realized that we just want to take all our decisions by ourselves and be in a cocoon, which is very separate from the Western countries and something to learn from. As you know, we are great, but this is something to learn from. The talk about your idea. Talk to a new person you see who could be of your help. And try and gauge as much negative feedback about your product as you can and then have answers to that. Don't be like in a self cocoon or a slightly ego that, you know, I know what I'm building and I'll do it on your own. Hota nahi hai waise.
Take Uber shares instead of going
alone. Yeah, take. Abhi Uber share bhi band ho gaya. It was not profitable apparently.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So what is your learning as an investor, because you, when you started investing, you did not really have background, like, you know, a lot of VC funds are started by people who were previously employed at a VC fund and then they quit and start their own, but which was not the case for you. So what was your journey of learning to be a good investor?
So my journey of learn, one of the important things which I think we follow at the fund today also is invest in companies where you would like to be involved. Or where you, so I have today 100 companies to invest in, right? Today, and I can invest in each one of them. I mean, I have a decent ticket size. Every founder is going to welcome me, but I don't want to do that. I want to invest in 20, 25 companies. Now, my approach is that I will invest in companies where I want to work with them or where I have some understanding, some conviction that I can help these companies grow rather than just thinking, oh, it's a great idea. It's a great founder. There are a few good funds backing it. I should also be one of them. That I did not do when I was doing angel investing. We did not invest along with larger funds. We did not invest through angel networks. We just invested our capital because we liked the company and then we helped them.
And that's what worked in our favor. None of the companies went bad. They went through Corona. They went through all the bad phases. But the roots were very strong and clear, you know. So in a very brutal language, I would say piggy banking is not the right way of investment. So as angel investors, as micro VCs, we tend to get attracted by deals which have been funded by larger investors. But we have consciously stayed away from that feeling. And that is honestly thanks to my dad. When you are 28, 29, you get very attracted that a Sequoia is funding. But my dad is like, apan isme kya karenge, you know? What is our role? We just put the money and then we forget. Then what's the joy? So, and I think that worked very, very, that worked in our favor to a large extent. So we continue to follow that philosophy. And that's an advice for all the new investors, and I usually what would be the right word? I usually say that that should be the approach of investing.
So you're saying don't let FOMO drive your decision.
Piggy banking, yeah.
Interesting.
Get your hands dirty.
I've heard from a lot of founders that the easiest way to raise funds is to create FOMO. One principal investor and then use that to create FOMO.
And that's so putting off, Akshay. When I see a founder who, the first thing they say is we are raising 2 million and we are getting 1.5 million from this investor. He's done this. So first 15 minutes, you're pitching your investors rather than pitching your team, your idea. You're pitching me your investors. I mean, if I'm genuinely interested, I will get there. You won't start your pitch from that, right? So that's very putting off, to be very honest.
So, you know, some of the people who are listening to this episode might want to pitch to you. So you said you want to invest in places where you have an interest. So what are the areas in which you have an interest?
So see, if we talk about, and that brings us to the larger question of our thesis also, right? So it's not just my personal interest. If I talk a little bit about the fund, I have my brother who's a robotics engineer who's done his master's in machine learning. He's one of the partners. My dad, who has worked with a lot of manufacturing companies, education companies, so he comes with his set of passion. I have worked with a bunch of agriculture companies, consumer companies. So I come with my own set. Now my analyst team, two analysts of mine have been there for a very long time. They have built their thesis on topics like health tech and all. So each one of us have our own passions over here. And we do not, we are honestly a sector agnostic fund because none of us have expertise beyond a point in any of the space to say that we understand it in and out. So that is why we are very clear. We are a small $10 million fund. We have three partners, three analysts. We have two, three great advisors from different sectors. We keep ourselves sector agnostic. We evaluate with an open mind. We think after we dislike the idea, we think where all we can add value and then we kind of take a decision. So having said that, anything which has a technological edge is what excites us. And something which is, so all most of our companies are positive impact companies, if you see. So we don't go there and look for positive impact companies. But I think if that is there, it is liked by us also and it is liked by our committee also. So that would be one of the drivers as well in our investment decisions. And yeah, mostly tech companies, I would say. And we stick to Indian companies. So Indian founders. And they great if they have a global product. Even if they don't and they're serving India as a market, we are still open to looking at them as well.
Would you describe D2C companies as tech-enabled companies or not?
No.
No? Okay. Yeah, no. I always wondered about that. While they are, I mean, they claim to be tech-enabled, but I always wondered if it is really tech-enabled or it is more about marketing-enabled. Like they are extremely good at marketing.
It is using Web 2 very nicely, I would say, the internet age. But sadly, Akshay, they all have to come offline, right? It is internet is still a very, very small market. So they have to spend. In a very simple language, how I tell my team, what is tech enablement and how does it value us? So tech enablement means there is one technology You spend a lot of money to make it. You spend a lot of money to get your initial customers. And then it's boom. Like, then you don't spend money. Then it automatically the customers come and your CAC becomes lower. Right? That is a typical technology company. Now, that does not happen in D2C. Even if you have grown to a size, and we have all the recent examples now, how much ever large you become, to get a new customer, you still have to kind of spend more money. So then you are not a tech company. Your tech is not helping you kind of increase your sales extravagantly. And it's very, very difficult to make a brand, right? So if you have made a brand, you are a nice consumer company. You're still not a tech company, is what I would say.
Okay, interesting. Give me some examples of companies you invested in. What was it that you felt, yes, I'm interested, I want to be in this business?
It's a company, name is Suend, okay? They basically have created a fully autonomous drone which sees an object, which maps the path. It changes the path if there is an object in between, which is a hindrance. And then it remembers that, and then it does not take that path again. It is one of the lightest drones out there, and it does not need a drone pilot. It is a made in India drone. It is not something which is assembled in India, which most all the drone companies in India do, is they assemble in India. It comes, and the founders are from a deep robotics background. So the product they have created is phenomenally good. And when they came to us 6 months back, they had created a great product. They had done, you know, great trials where they actually, the amount of fertilizers and pesticides you were spraying on the crop was reducing immensely. Now imagine you are saving the soil, you are saving the quality of the produce, you are pesticiding it better. That means for the farmer, the yield is also increasing. The cost of spraying is also reducing, the cost of fertilizer. So the advantages were insane. I mean, there are not two, three more. There are more than 10 advantages. It's great for the climate. So many things, right? And I think, and I saw a slight struggle when they were trying to raise funds, because people just say drones, oh, India mein, you know, there's so much misconception. India mein drones chala nahi sakte, drones ke liye bahut certification chahiye. But I got very excited. And if you go in depth, you realize that it's not a very, people assume ki farmers ko you sell is very, very difficult. But you need to realize they're not even selling to farmers. They're selling to fertilizer companies who are providing spraying services. So I think this is one startup which really excited me based on what they had built, the team. I think everything fit perfectly. All they needed is right kind of financial support and strategy to kind of being able to crack the market, which we are doing with them right now. So now think about it, tea, coffee plantation. It's a task to serve because, you know, it's a hilly terrain. You know, you have to carry that fertilizer, come back, and they spray a lot because they want to save the crop. You can't use a regular drone which has been used in paddy today, because paddy is a straight farm. Whereas tea, coffee plantations are on a terrain. So after a point, the drone pilot can't see. So you need an autonomous drone. Rubber plantations are so huge. And so they have a truck going today, jiske upar itna bada fertilizer ka wo rehta hai. And then there's so much loss and so much extra fertilizer. Same sugarcane. I don't know if you know, but you can't spray pesticides on sugarcane, and a huge chunk of sugarcane gets damaged because it got some ants, and you can't walk through, you know, something will bite you. So this solves that problem. Plus they have an analytics drone as well. So companies like Zeta Farms and all, which are the largest farm managers, are using their drones to analyze how they can improve the yield on the farm as well.
Okay, interesting. What made you interested to speak to them? Was it that they had a good deck, or was it that they, I mean, what, you know, I've heard from.
No, so I'll tell you, we were building our thesis on this whole drone technology, and we had spoken to a bunch of drone companies, and that's how we landed up speaking to them. But obviously, we don't understand the technology so much. But then when we discussed with my partner, Darshan, and he comes from the robotics angle, he spoke to a bunch of people in Boston and other places on the on the how many companies are doing fully autonomous, what is fully autonomous in its true sense, because everyone calls themselves. So I think we did deep research on their technology before. Use case was exciting, but the tech needs to work, right? So that's where we had the conviction that, you know, we can lead the round and we can invest in the company.
Okay, interesting. I guess some of the other like notable investments in your portfolio are like, say, Neiman's, which has raised quite a bit now. Ajna Lens also has raised a fair amount. These were your angel investments? Or
these were our angel investments. So Ajna Lens was of the first company we ever invested in the startup space. Like after we started Sun Icon. Before that, we were doing from dad's angel portfolio here and there. But post starting Sun Icon as an advisory, Ajna Lens was the first company where we invested. They had this huge headset with a wire coming out. And I think what made us invest there, you know, was the vision. I think the team is excellent. The vision back then was also very, very clear. And it was a fun bet to take, honestly, because we had not seen something like that happening in India. This is late 2018 we are talking. So we only knew the larger companies like Google, Magic Leap building their XR devices, right? Other than VR, we had no company in India doing it. So
what is XR?
XR is basically mixed reality.
Okay.
It's called MR. And then there is AR. So AR with MR, they also call it XR, but it's all... So it's just... You should just understand the difference between VR and AR, and rest all is a mix-up of everything. So if something is coming in your environment, which means if you wear a glass and you can see your table and then something else, it's AR. But if you wear a glass and you are, you know, deported to a new environment where you can't see anything from your existing environment, then it's VR.
Okay. So like if you're playing a video game, a VR video game, so you're totally immersed in that environment, whereas
that's VR.
AR would be like maybe an educational use case where you can see an engine in front of you and you can manipulate it with your fingers to understand how an engine works.
Absolutely. Or things like that. Absolutely.
Okay. Understood. Okay. And how about Neiman's? How did that happen?
So Neiman's, I actually saw their article on something like a Your Story or Inc. 42, I don't remember. And we connected to them. We ordered their shows. And we actually started raising funds for Neiman. The investment was a very later decision. And that time... it was not known, you know, and that time Neiman's shoes was 4,000, 5,000. So most of the larger VCs were like, you know, it's a very expensive product for the Indian market. A lot of people thought that do we need a merino wool shoe in India? But so I think in that it was purely the founder's conviction and passion, because we worked with them for 6 months in their fundraising journey and we saw the struggle, but we also saw that, you know, there's so much merit in the product. We actually built their financial model, their unit economics. It was all done by our team. So by default, we had conviction in the product. And when in the first round, we could not get the larger VCs on board and we decided to do a angel round with a bunch of angels is where we decided that we will participate.
Okay. Interesting. Do you still run the advisory service?
No.
Or is it...
I personally don't. In Sun Capital, we have a gentleman who does, but it's also on a small scale that we do today. Not very actively.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's not as scalable as a venture fund is.
Not about scalable also. It's about where you want to put your time. I still feel that there is a huge need, honestly. There are a few good investment banks helping the startups, but there is a huge need today, and we just decided to change the path. So, but there is still a gap.
I guess at the early stage, it's not lucrative enough. Therefore, the best talent doesn't think of catering to that market.
It's not lucrative enough. It's very difficult to convince a founder that he needs a banker. He doesn't have the bandwidth to pay. He is not a good listener. So, there are challenges in the space. You know, unless and until you
are investing and multiplying your money, it does not really make that much sense. But hopefully we'll reach a stage where, you know, the founders are willing to pay and they consider it an important part. And I think that'll be very helpful.
Okay. How do you do your deal sourcing? Is it inbound or outbound?
Both. So we reach out to founders every single day. Founders reach out to us every single day. We have a lot of incubators, accelerators, bankers also reaching out to us. So everything is welcome. We have our daily meetings. We discuss all the companies which we get. So it's a very close-knitted process we do on a daily basis where we discuss the idea, we get back. But everything is all our sourcing channels are open. Jahan se achhi deal mil jaye.
Okay. How do you, I mean, you must be getting like hundreds of deals or on a monthly basis, it must be thousands. How do you filter? What is the process through which you identify that this is worth investing time on?
So we have a very simple process. So once the deal comes, it comes in our internal software and we all get to see it. And then one of the analysts have to pick it in a day or two. And then we... all these analysts also have been seeing 10-15 deals in a day, right? So they by now they know how to scan, what to not scan, and they decide which ones to pass, which ones to move forward with. If they decide to move forward with, then they rank it on an ABC kind of a level where what is more interesting, what is less interesting, what needs to be looked immediately. And then we sit every day 1 hour, we spend 2 minutes per deal to even discuss the ones we passed. So that we all are on the same page. And then the ones which we are moving forward, we discuss the strategies. So we are a 5-people team. So we have enough hands to do this. Plus we have a good internal operation and processes tech to help us do that as well.
What would make a deal as a deal? Is it like how much revenue or background?
No, it's mostly mostly the idea. Like, because by now we've seen 10 companies in each sector. So we know what is a new idea and what is a me too idea. So most cases, it's the idea, honestly, that what they are working on, the problem statement is what decides the APC, not the pedigree of the founder or the revenue.
Idea in the sense of like addressable market, like how?
No, about the problem. Okay. What problem are we solving? I mean, there could be a great founder, but he might be building a me too product, which he can sell and it can be a great company, but we might not necessarily rank it A. So A ranking is happening on the basis of idea.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. And how did you, typically funds have like a 7-year life? Yeah. So, you know, what at all times you must be mindful that you need to return money in 7 years, which I think so far in the Indian startup ecosystem hasn't really happened much in terms of the VCs getting exits. So, you know, what's your thesis on that? Like, how do you think you will be able to return money?
So, see, when we invest in a company, whenever we are choosing a company, we are very mindful on how much time this company is going to take for exit. There are some companies we know it might take more than 7 years and it's a risk we are taking. There are some we know that it's going to be even earlier. So it is very diversified in that sense. And also we start parallelly thinking on how can we get an exit in a company. So once we invest within 1-1.5 year, we know that who could be the next investor or what could be the next path. And honestly, if the company is doing well, if everything is on track, then there is not much stress because there is not one way to exit. There are 4 or 5 ways of exit. VCs or in companies which are not being able to exit, the main reason is the companies have not done well. It's not that the horizon was a problem. None of my LPs will mind if I tell them that, you know, in this few companies, we might have to wait for a year. They'll be okay. Right? They all are, it's not that they are putting their money, liquid money, right? It's all an extra capital. But the larger problem is that if the company is not doing well or if you're just ballooning the valuation and getting other investors, that's where stress needs to come, which we have stayed away from. We are okay if our company does not grow 10x in 1 year in valuation. If they grow 2x also, we are happy with it.
But they should be building a strong base is what I mean.
What are the 4-5 ways in which a VC can get an exit?
VC can, for a VC like us who is coming in early, we can get exit through the next round. It could be a Series A, Series B. We could also do, if the company is profitable, making healthy margins, we could do an SME IPO, which we have planned for a few of our companies. If there is a strategic player who can buy, that's also an option, which is happening with the currently one of my angel investments. So a strategic player is coming in there. Larger PEs are coming now, not just VCs, but PEs have started coming at the Series A stage. So we've seen all that. Like with my angel companies now, we've seen next round, we've seen strategic, we've seen PE, we've seen all of it. So anything can happen based on how the company shapes up.
Okay, okay, interesting. Do you generally prefer to...
I'll tell you one thing. It's... Mostly, I might make more return if it's a Series A, Series B. But I see more chances of a strategic and an IPO in Indian market today.
Okay. Like the big ticket investors are not coming in, you're saying, as of now.
As of like those... So the global investors are pulling back. So the whole game is mostly coming in the hands of Indian investors. If you see the last 2 quarters also, family offices have invested more money in the startup ecosystem than the Indian VC ecosystem. So you can clearly see the gears shifting where family offices are just managing their own money and investing in startups. Whereas the VC industry has seen a bit of a struggle. And India is largely a family office driven market, right? We have VCs, but it's still most of the capital lies with large family offices, broking houses, PE fund. So if they take active gears, the life becomes... So they understand the market also much better. They understand the Indian market much better. They are more valuing the companies more correctly. So so that is why I was talking to someone and I said, whatever is happening for the great, you know. Some of the things are dying, but I think a fresh start will be great for the whole ecosystem.
So, why is global investment pulling back? They've not seen the kind of returns that they were expecting. Like the India story was oversold.
The India story was oversold. You know, a lot of companies kept on raising money, but the top lines were not increasing. I mean, we all know that. I don't want to name anything or name what happened. But if you just open all the companies which did bad articles of the last 6 months, they have mentioned the reasons why. So it's sad in a way. But I think it is very difficult for people from other countries to be able to gauge the Indian market. So that happened in our stock market also, right? All the foreign funds came in. They all tried to invest in the Indian stock market. Couldn't do that well. They decided to exit. And then our Indian heroes picked up. And it's a big market today. So, and they all are investing in the Indian stock exchange through institutions and funds. So foreign capital will come back to India. It's not that we don't have the potential to make the return. But they would give like people to us to manage it because we have foot on the ground and we have skin in the game.
Interesting. Very interesting. The implication of this is that possibly valuations will not be as high as they used to be because I guess for a foreign capital, there was a dollar amount in their mind, dollar lens through which they were valuing businesses. An Indian investor will value it through a rupee lens, so it will not
be able
to...
Which is right way, right? Your customer is paying you in rupee. So what a foreign investor wants, he wants return on the capital. He does not care... If you were valued, earlier the companies were starting their seed round with a $10 million and hoping to do the next round at $100 million. So the investor was making a 10x return. Today you do the seed round at $1 million and do the next round at a $10 million. Still I make my 10x return. But the valuations are more realistic from a next investor point of view, right? So yes, the founder gets diluted more. But then he will be mindful in how he is growing the business, how much capital he is raising, all of that, right? So the investors will still get their return and the founders will still make a good, sustainable business, exit, capital, all of it.
But it will happen in a more acceptable and realistic way. Like today, we don't have companies which can be IPO'd because of the overvaluation situation. So our Indian market ka market cap hi itna nahi hai jo kuch companies ke valuations hai, right?
Interesting. Okay. Interesting. So, you know, my last question to you as a wrap up, what's your advice to founders of when they should raise, whom they should raise from? Do you have any suggestions?
Raise from people who are going to be involved if you are at an early stage. Angel networks are great. I'm not saying not to raise from angel networks, but don't just raise from angel networks. Have one or two serious investors who have invested and who are going to be full time with you. And then you angels can nicely support the round. Angels can be a good, or if you're just raising a small, very small seed round, and if you're raising from angels, then raise from those angels who are from the industry, who are genuinely interested in your product. Don't go out there and raise 5 lakhs, 10 lakhs from people whom you don't even know. Then money is not going to help you. It's further just creating stress.